Good morning and welcome to today's PSA programming here on KNCI, KZZO, KYMX, and KHDK. Operated by Bonneville International, I'm Cody Robinson. My first guest is Nina Salorno, president of Crime Victims United, a statewide nonprofit providing support for victims of crime and their families. She's here to discuss the work they do and their upcoming All-American Rib Cook-Off in Auburn, August 12th. Thanks for being with us. Could you introduce yourself and provide a little background on what you do?
My name is Nina Salerno, and I am the president of Crime Victims United. Crime Victims United is a nonprofit, a statewide nonprofit based in Placer County that helps to assist victims of crime throughout the court system, find them services, as well as provide scholarships for young victims of crime as they try to repair their lives and move forward.
Oh, I love that. Now, you put on the All-American Rib Cook-Off every year in Auburn. Is this a fundraiser for Crime Victims United?
It's a fundraiser not only for Crime Victims United, but we also believe in giving back and in prevention. So we connect with a lot of other nonprofits that the Rib Cook-Off funds are generated to support. To give you a little background, the Rib Cook-Off, I think it's in its sixth year now, was created as a mechanism to, like I said earlier, we give scholarships to young victims of crime to fund that, but then also recognizing that there were some other nonprofits out there that are critical to people throughout our community and our state, mm-hmm. and to be able to give to them. And it was just a fun and unique way of raising funds. We looked at like the Reno Rib Cook-Off, and I wanted to, it was really important to me, although that's a wonderful event, it's very expensive and large and commercial. We really wanted to make this very community and family oriented to keep the cost down, allow people to participate, and then allow cook teams that can make, you know, like can't be on the big major scale, but want to compete, come and compete and have a good time.
Could you talk about some of the nonprofits that are involved?
This year, we have a variety of nonprofits involved. The SPCA of Placer County will be one of the beneficiaries, and that's kind of near and dear to our heart because a lot of animals that are adopted become service animals, especially for victims of crime, trauma animals. They just bring that comfort and love to people, especially in trauma. And in fact, we have a service dog here at Crime Victims United that goes to court with people that was adopted out of the shelter, actually. We have Placer County Chaplaincy that provide a wonderful service throughout Placer County and surrounding communities when there is trauma and helping families. We also have several law enforcement agencies' cadet programs that will benefit to help sustain their programs as people are learning to go into public safety in a variety of capacities from law enforcement to dispatch to chaplaincy. There is Parkside Church has a very large youth group that will be helping and largely helping kids to go to camp that can't afford it. Mm-hmm. We also give to the Recreation District, again, to offset costs for a lot of families throughout the surrounding communities so that kids can participate in after-school programs and hopefully keep them off the streets and learning good things versus running into trouble or gangs or things like that. And then we have a horse therapy program we're developing, again, for trauma. And some of the proceeds will be going to start that new program.
Great. And how much of the proceeds go back to these organizations?
100% of the proceeds go back to the different beneficiaries. Nothing that's not a for-profit at all. Everybody that participates and runs it, I have a wonderful volunteer committee that steps up. We've got some wonderful sponsors this year. In fact, Mosley Collins Injury Lawyers Firm became our name sponsor this year, and we're very excited to work with them. We have Foothill Drywall and Painting, who's also a name sponsor. The Station, which is a local brew pub here, is also one of our big sponsors. So we've gotten some wonderful sponsors all throughout.
Oh, fantastic. Now, could you tell us a little bit about the scholarship winner from last year?
She was a young lady from Southern California, and she and a girlfriend were coming home one evening when all of a sudden they realized that a car kept advancing on them, and she didn't know why, and eventually it came, you know, kept advancing, kept coming, trying to cut them off. So she actually swerved the car, and they rolled on an embankment, and then luckily both of them survived. However, they realized that the person that was advancing on them had then chased them. And she was trying to get away from the individual and ended up running and actually jumping off a cliff in order to survive. And she did survive. And her name is Jenna. And Jenna now is at UCLA going on to be a trauma therapist. And we were able to provide her funding for her years at UCLA.
Wow, what a great story. The way that she was able to turn that trauma around and now she wants to help others.
A lot of the young victims of crime are just amazing. And then their quest to give back is just so admirable after coming out of such trauma. But that a lot of the victims we come across, they want to do something because they understand what it's like to be in trauma and to be scared. And now they want to give back. It's really amazing.
Which makes the scholarships that you give out that much more important. We want people like this to chase their dreams and have the means to do so.
Yes. It's very, very important. And just like with each of the beneficiaries, the money really goes back into their programs, like I said, either prevention. The SPCA was new this year, and we're really excited because we want to partner with them on getting people either therapy dogs or dogs for court and different district attorney's offices and shelters and things like that. And so we're kind of looking forward to doing that program with them.
Oh, good. Now, we understand you got Kansas City Barbecue sanctioned this year. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so there's going to be a couple different categories, which is exciting. So Kansas City Barbecue Society is the huge professional, let's say, barbecue society throughout the nation, and they hold competitions all around, and people compete for money and title on these. So when you see like the Reno Rib Cook-Off and some of the bigger rib cook-offs, they are sanctioned and they have official judges. So we were able to get sanctioned and we did add in that category, which was really exciting for a lot of the cookers. A lot of them can't afford to travel to Texas and things like that. Mm-hmm. But yet now they have a chance to win for that very coveted title. Then we have a People's Choice Award this year. And the People's Choice is what we've always had. The people that participate, taste the ribs, get to vote, and they get to vote for first, second, third place. Plus, they vote for the team that they think is most spirited. Then we added a Piggy Award this year, and that's actually a media award. So we're looking for some media, perhaps you can join us, to come, and they'll get to taste, and they're going to vote for who gets the Piggy Award. And then a sponsor added the Best Rig Award, because it's really kind of cool when you come out and see these teams and see their different smokers and productions. So we have somebody that'll get voted with the most unique barbecue rig this year.
Oh, awesome.
Fun chance for the teams to win in all different ways.
Absolutely. So how many chefs compete in this?
We have, I think, 16 teams this year. We keep it between 16 and 20.
Okay.
So we have 16 teams, a lot of law enforcement teams. It was Placer County Sheriff has won 3 years in a row. So the sheriff, Wayne Wu, sent a challenge to the surrounding law enforcement agencies.
Got it.
So we have several, like from El Dorado, Sacramento, competing. We have a bail agents team that competes out of Roseville, Bounty Hunter Cafe. We have some local restaurants that are competing. So it's people from all over compete. We have a team coming out of Reno that's a family team that's going to be competing. So it's really fun.
Could you tell us some event highlights? What else is going on that day?
So we have two great bands that will be playing. The first band is a local band called Auburn Ravine Revival. And they're kind of like, you know, the 80s rock band, just that good dance music and people get up and dance. The next band is North 40. They've always played super good country band. Again, people are up dancing, just having a good time. Besides tastings, there's vendors for people to go look at, learn different things. We have a Kids World going this year. We'll have games out for people to play. There's obviously a full bar, and we had wonderful liquor sponsors this year. We have at the main bar, Jack Daniels, Tito's, and Milagro Tequila will be sponsoring. Up at the VIP section, Garrison Brothers actually sponsored it, and they're building a big lounge for the VIPs for us. And that's Garrison Brothers Whiskey, and again, Tito's up there. We have a great raffle going. Somebody will be able to have a chance to win a green egg, or a beautiful piece of amber jewelry that was donated. The vendors all come in with a big basket that people can win. There's a door prize for people to win. We also have what's called the grab bag, which is a $5 pool, and you're guaranteed to win something $10 and above. Most of that's like gift certificates to surrounding restaurants or events. So we just have a whole lot going on. The entertainment during the day is free. You know, you can just come on out, bring out your family. Like I said, they can participate in the kids' world if they want. We just make it totally, you just get to go out, relax, and have a really good day.
Oh, good. Now, will there be other food to eat there other than ribs?
Yes, we have vendors out there with other food. You know, French fries. I believe there's somebody doing tri-tip sandwiches. I know that we're having root beer floats. One of the local nonprofits is doing a whole root beer float station, which happens to be my favorite thing. Uh-huh. We have popcorn coming. I mean, just all sorts of stuff.
Now, where is this held and what times?
Okay, so it is going to be held at Regional Park here in Auburn, which is the park, if you came up Highway 49, it's off Dry Creek. The event itself runs 11 to 5. If people want to taste and buy the tasting tickets, that is that part of the competition runs from 12 to 3.
Got it.
Again, you know, you can just come in, even if one of you wants to taste and four of you just want to play, you just buy one ticket. And you can buy the tickets at the allamericanribcookoff.com. We encourage people to buy ahead of time because the event has always sold out the tasting portion.
Got it.
And then bring your friends and family to come play.
Awesome. Now, is parking free?
Parking is free all around the park. If people would like more of a premium parking, it'll be available at very low cost at Parkside Church.
Got it. One more time, let's go over where they can buy tickets.
Sure. They can go to the allamericanribcookoff.com site, and that's where they can buy them online. We do have some that you can purchase at the door that day. But again, those will be limited. And for those that do purchase tickets online, I would encourage them to come, you know, like right at 11, because you really want to get there when the teams are first putting out the ribs, because you choose out of the teams, you choose, you get a half a rack, so you choose which team to taste, and you don't want the chance of them running out. So, you know, I would encourage people to get there early. We open the gates a little bit early anyway. Come enjoy and have fun.
All right, looking forward to it. That was Nina Salerno, president of Crime Victims United. If you would like more information on the All American Rib Cookoff, visit allamericanribcookoff.com. That's allamericanribcookoff.com. If you have questions about this programming, please direct your correspondence to public affairs in care of this station. My next guest is Dr. Julie Gatza, chiropractor and co-founder of the Florida Wellness Institute. She's here to talk about gut health and the worst foods for anxiety and what you can do about it. Thanks for being with us. Could you introduce yourself and provide a little background on what you do?
Sure. My name is Dr. Julie Gatza. I'm a chiropractor for the last 32 years, and my specialty is chronic problems, and they stem from what I've found is digestive. So if you fix somebody's digestive system and really get it working so it's efficient and it's breaking down foods and it's absorbing the things that you need, you have a leg up on being able to handle everything else that you're trying to on your laundry list. So I found that out a long time ago, and when it's ignored, you get some relief, but it doesn't necessarily get somebody back to the health that they desire.
Right. Now, you're here to talk about anxiety and gut health specifically and how they're correlated. But first, let's talk about anxiety. I think most people know what that is, but in your words, and what are some of the common symptoms?
I mean, anytime somebody's feeling anxiety, they might feel a racing feeling, uncomfortable. They might have their heart racing. They might be sweating and breaking in a sweat, breathing, you know, too fast, and just generally, you know, very disturbed in that sense. And what I have seen is the uptake on people having anxiety since I've been practicing has tremendously increased. And I have to put it towards the foods that we're eating. There's a lot more preservatives, and we're eating a lot more on the fly, and our soil isn't as replenished as it should be, and it's more depleted. We're using more Roundup and things all over our plants, and the fact is the bodies haven't changed in, you know, thousands of years, yet our food and our sources of food has been changing, and we're not doing as well with that.
Right. Now, is anxiety triggered solely by foods and gut health, or is it situational too?
for certain it's situational, but I do find that when you have gut health, when you have nutrients in properly, when you're eating the proper clean foods, the situational does not seem to come up nearly as much as when somebody is, you know, eating poorly and, you know, not getting enough sleep and not exercising and, you know, really just pushing the body to the limit.
So how does anxiety affect the digestive system?
So the way that it does is when you have any problems with anxiety, you're supposed to be making enzymes to break down your food. And those enzymes break down the proteins and the fats and the carbohydrates and the vegetables that you're eating. And we're generally not making enough enzymes in particular. So in general, somebody who's not anxious is not breaking down the foods properly. Now you put somebody who is under stress, whose the body isn't working efficiently anymore, who's, you know, vibrating at a higher level, and digestion is not the first priority for that person. So the digestive system says, all right, we're going quiet. Let's handle the immediate scene on hand. And so people who are anxious and having anxiety pretty much have shut their digestion system off, even if it's temporarily. So now they have more toxins in the body because they're not breaking it down. They're more inflamed. And it sort of begets the next time that they're not feeling good, which pushes you into another anxiety, you know, moment.
Now, what are some common anxiety-related gut symptoms and conditions?
You can have irritable bowel, any type of gas and bloating, and GERD, which is esophageal reflux, which is basically acid reflux. When you're having any of these things that are occurring, it's also basically the system saying, hey, something's not right.
Right.
You know, what have you been eating? What's going on in your life? What have you been skipping meals? Are you not sleeping enough? Are you living on, you know, coffees and teas and soda pops and things like that? So, you know, you really do need to start eating cleanly and mostly just a lot of protein and a lot of steamed green vegetables.
Now, if someone's digestion is bad, how do they intake the nutrients needed to build up their digestive glands and organs?
Put them on a high quality digestive enzyme because I already know they're not breaking down their food.
Right.
The one that I use is called Absorbaid, and it has the ability to break down the proteins, the fats, the carbohydrates. All these are needed nutrients so that you can then repair the system, get your hormonal system working properly, calm down the nerves, let you sleep better, take away pain and inflammation. So by first just starting with taking digestive enzymes, you've already won the game. Now you can start to clean up your diet a bit. If you can't go cold turkey on everything, at least you'll be breaking down the fast food with these digestive enzymes if you're not quitting fast food immediately, and at least getting the nutrients that you can from it and getting rid of the toxins that come along with it.
Now, where can they find these enzymes? Are they found in food or is this like a pill they can take?
It's a pill that they can take. And if you go to the website, which is naturessources.com, and you can read about the Absorbaid, or you can call the 1-800 number and they'll send you free samples if you use the code radio. And that's 1-800-827-7656.
Great. And what are some foods that really support the immune system?
Real whole foods. And, you know, that's just so simple from the point of, you know, fish and chicken and steak and eggs are real whole protein foods. And then we're talking, you know, vegetables. I'm a fan of having people cook their vegetables just slightly, not eating a whole bunch of raw salads because it's a little hard on digestion, hard to break down. So, you know, beans and asparagus and broccoli and squashes and yellow squash and zucchini squash, all those are great, clean, whole foods that will help you. And then, you know, making sure that you're drinking water and starting to knock out anything else other than water. The carbonation, the coffee, the tea, the soda pops, those keep you from absorbing nutrition. So what I have found is people who drink even one of those a day are pretty much lacking the nutrients they need to feel good, to calm down, to sleep well, and to have energy.
Oh, wow. Now, what food should we never eat if we want to avoid or at least reduce anxiety?
I mean, you know, some of the basic ones are obviously the sugar drinks and, you know, the monster drinks and all those things that really jack up your adrenal glands. And those are going to pretty much cause a normal, healthy person to not feel so great. you know, fast food, you just don't know what's in it. I know there's cleaner fast foods, but in general, you know, it's fast food, and it comes along with the fact that it's probably not high in nutrients, and it's usually robbing your body from nutrition just trying to break it down. You know, white bread and chips, things like that, you know, obviously candies and things like this, and then food additives. We have a lot of things that come in packages, boxes, and cans that we're, you know, ripping open and eating before, you know, in between meals or in spite of a meal and instead of a meal. And, you know, if you don't understand all the ingredients on it or it's a laundry list of it, it's probably not what you want to be putting into your body.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, how do lifestyle choices play a role in reducing anxiety and maintaining our digestive health?
Well, I mean, just, you know, where you start in just a few things, it could be, you know, going to bed on time, maybe, you know, turning off the screens appropriately and not, you know, reaching for it late at night when, you know, you should let the whole brain and body start to relax and sleep and, you know, don't re-stimulate it with something else, you know, getting some exercise. I mean, a 10-minute walk is going to do you a heck of a lot of good. And, you know, at those 10 minutes could turn into 11 minutes and then 12 minutes. And all of a sudden you're in a habit that you're like, hey, you know, I feel a lot better after doing this. And it's just, you know, it's like by the time you sat and wondered, should you be exercising, you could have been home by now.
Right.
So, you know, chewing your food thoroughly also helps you to break down your food itself, and it aids your body in being able to get nutrients from the food that you're eating. So, you know, we're always in a hurry. We're starting to, you know, eat food like, you know, throwing a piece of steak at a dog and it's swallowed and you're just like, wow, did they even taste that? You know, if you stop and count how many times you chew, you know, I always pick the silly number of 22 just because it makes people stop and go, wow, I am so not chewing my food enough.
Right.
And it slows you down. You'll not eat as much. You'll lose weight by doing that. And you'll help aid your body in getting more nutrients from food.
That's a great tip. Do you have any other tips for reducing anxiety and maintaining digestive health?
Other than, you know, what we've been talking about, there's a lot of aids that a lot of these ethnicities in this country have used over the years to help with breaking down their food. You know, you've got the Germans with the sauerkraut and the Japanese with the ginger, and we've got pineapple that breaks down proteins, and the parsley on the plate helps as well in digestion. And, you know, putting mint in your water would help also digestively. So there's a lot of different things that you can use to aid naturally that, you know, basically taste fine and, you know, enhance your meal on top of it. So, you know, the one thing that I say to people is you can hear all this great information and, you know, it's all lovely to have in your head, but you really do have to apply this, and you won't be getting a call or a knock on your front door tomorrow that says, great, today is the day you need to get some Absorbaid. You need to chew your food more. You have to actually do it. And it's not that hard to put some of these very basic points in for you, for your family. And you're going to notice that everyone is doing better because they're a little more mindful of what they're, you know, doing as far as choices and, you know, feeling better after eating.
Now, let's go back to the digestive enzymes that you recommend, because I'm curious about this. They improve digestive health and immunity. What kind of enzymes and why?
So we should be making digestive enzymes. Our world is stressed. We are stressed. We're all working a lot. We're, you know, running around and trying to keep up, you know, just making it all work for us. And so we are lacking enzymes in general, and I'm noticing it more and more the more years that I practice. This company called Absorbaid has a enzyme in it that breaks down protein. So every time you're eating steak or chicken or fish or anything that has protein, it aids in getting the most you can from that protein. It has enzymes called lipase, which breaks down fats. We need fats to repair our tissues. We need fats to make hormones. We need fats to fight pain and inflammation, because the basis of the things that fight pain and inflammation are made from fats. So it doesn't mean just go eat fat. It means eat good fats, but then make sure you can break them down. And taking something like the Absorbaid will help you with your protein and the digestion of your fats. There's also enzymes in there that break down carbohydrates. There's enzymes that break down dairy products. And there's enzymes that break down vegetables. So it's a full array of what you need. And, you know, I have a lot of patients over the years who take multivitamins, and wonderful, but I'm always the proponent of, let's break down the food that's in front of us. We're shopping for it, we're buying it, we're preparing it, we're putting it on our plates, we're trying to feed our family and make it taste good. So let's wring the most nutrients we can which is why I'm such a fan of enzymes, and this one in particular. The other thing is if you take it on an empty stomach and you take Absorbaid, let's say before you go to bed, it also helps to break down inflammation, toxins, bacteria, and viruses.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, if you're swollen or you're sick or you're not, you're doing under the weather, you take this Absorbaid and it aids your digestion and your body in fighting these things.
Now, where can listeners get more information on either Absorbaid or any other things that we talked about today?
So they can go to the Nature's Sources website, and they can read about the Absorbaid. And there's one called Absorbaid Platinum. It comes in powders. It comes in pills. Just get yourself educated because, you know, it's high quality. It's made to actually work. And, you know, that's where I, you know, stand behind it because I've seen it change so many people. I mean, people can even be in the throes of having a acid reflux and they take it and 15 minutes later, they're like, seriously? And I'm like, I know, wow. It actually helps. And then they can go to the 1-800 number. Don't forget to use the code radio and ask for some free samples or 20% off your first order. But that's 1-800-827-7656. And for any kind of tips, I have an Instagram, which is called Dr. Julie Healthy Vibes.
All right. Thank you. That was Dr. Julia Gatza, co-founder of the Florida Wellness Institute. If you have questions regarding this program, please direct your correspondence to public affairs in care of this station. My next guest is Amy Delisio, CEO of the California Dairy Council. She's here to discuss the great work that they do, June being Dairy Month, why dairy is a great food and food choice, their mobile dairy classroom, and so much more. Thanks for being with us. Could you introduce yourself and provide a little background on what you do?
Hello, my name is Amy Delisio. I'm currently the CEO here at the Dairy Council of California. And my background is I am a registered dietitian nutritionist with a master's in public health. And I currently oversee the work that we do here at the Dairy Council, which includes, you know, providing education to the community, equipping partners with messages on positive nutrition, as well as, you know, building out partnerships and collaborations across the state of California to provide nutrition education to school children and health professionals.
Now, what is the Dairy Council of California and how long has there been one?
Yeah, so the Dairy Council of California has been around for over 100 years. And it was started by dairy farmers right here in California. And it really was a nutrition organization originally to help educate children on health and get milk into the schools to provide a way to prevent rickets in children. But right now, you know, we've evolved over the time, but we're still a nutrition organization. We work under the direction of the California Department of Food and Agriculture on the behalf of the dairy community. So we work with dairy farmers and processors. And again, we partner with different organizations across the state of California to provide nutrition in schools and communities to really educate on the positive role of dairy that it plays in your diet, as well as, you know, overall health and nutrition.
What motivated you to do this kind of work?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, working in the world of nutrition when I started out, just kind of seeing, well, we really need to work on prevention, right? I started out and I grew up in a small town in Ohio where we were maybe more low income. And working in my rotations for my RDN, I really saw a lot of sick people and started to think about why are people not well? How can we use nutrition as a preventive way to support people? And then you start to dig in and you really see there are people that have access to healthy foods and people that don't. It could be financial, it could be where they live. So it really opened up my eyes to really working in public health nutrition. So part of that is to really educate people on the value of nutrition, how it helps to them to reach their full potential, but also working with partners and communities and government to include more access to healthy foods like fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and dairy foods.
Now, what do you love about your job?
Yeah, I really love, you know, nutrition is something that everyone needs at all stages of life. And also, I get to work at the nexus of nutrition, health, and agriculture. So, you know, not only do we work in educating people on nutrition, but we also see the agriculture side. Dairy is actually the largest produced crop in the country is produced here. And you really see the value of how dairy goes from basically farm to fridge, farm to school in about 48 hours. So it's really exciting to educate people on nutrition and how it can support them at any stage in their life to be, you know, the healthiest person they can be, reach their full potential, and as well as see that connection to California dairy farmers.
What is the goal for the Dairy Council?
Yeah, so we really want to support lifelong healthy eating habits for all Californians, right? And also help to increase access to healthy food, like I mentioned. So we really want to see dairy a part of healthy eating patterns. And we also want to continue to support families in making healthier choices. And that could be through, partnering with several nutrition programs like the school breakfast and lunch program, where they serve dairy as part of their meals, as well as other healthy foods like fruits and vegetables or other. Even right now, Summer Meals is out there and they're serving healthy foods to families, children everywhere across California to support healthy eating.
How are you celebrating and promoting June is Dairy Month?
Yeah, so June is National Dairy Month, and it's a great way to start off our summers with nutrient-rich foods. So we really take this time to appreciate the variety of milk and dairy products that are available and contribute to healthy, sustainable diets, as well as celebrate our California farm families. So some of the things we're doing this month, we collaborated with the 49ers Foundation on a PSA that really talks about the important contributions of dairy on and off the field and how it contributes to nutrition security and healthy communities. We've developed an activation kit for our partners that we've shared out on social media and through our newsletters. We've also hosted teach and taste activities in classrooms across California where students get to sample different types of dairy foods like different cheeses, yogurts, cottage cheese, and milk. And some of the other things we did in honor of that was publishing the Healthy Eating Table. It's one of our magazines that really focused on the first 1,000 days of life. And we're also hosting a nutrition webinar in collaboration with the California Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics.
And why is dairy a great food and food choice?
Yeah, so dairy, you know, again, it comes in so many different varieties. You can choose, you know, what fits best for you, whether you like milk, cheese, yogurt, cottage cheese, ice cream here and there, why not? But of the value of dairy foods is great. It improves bone health, which many of us know, you know, from the calcium, but there's also many other benefits. It reduces blood pressure, can have a reduced risk of cardiovascular disease and type 2 diabetes. There's also this connection to improve digestive health and gut health, which we know is really helps and benefits overall health. We also are seeing new research where it's showing it supports brain health and academic achievement in young children and school-age children. So, of course, that's super important. It's also usually easy accessible in communities. Kids are getting it at school. You find it in most of your grocery stores, different varieties. And it's low processed, available. And like we said, you know, it comes to you, it's farm to fork. It comes to you, your table within about 48 hours. So it's really fresh and healthy as well.
Now, how does the Dairy Council promote nutrition and nutrition equity?
Yeah, so, you know, we really look at providing all of our resources and programs at no cost to communities and community partners. So those are available. We continue to work to make sure that dairy is easily accessible. So we know it's at schools. We want to see it in different grocery stores and communities. We partner with local organizations like maybe pantries and other community organizations, and sometimes are able to offer them grants to provide additional education in their communities that is really culturally appropriate and relevant. And we really believe that dairy can be part of that solution to nutrition security, again, because of its unique nutrition profile. It's low cost, it's widely available, and it fits across many different diet patterns and cultures. So it's really a way to promote nutrition at a low cost for everyone.
What is the dairy matrix?
Yeah, so the dairy matrix is like kind of this unique composition of dairy foods. And it, you know, in addition to the protein and vitamins and minerals that we're aware of, there's also these non-nutrient components known as bioactive compounds, which are embedded within dairy foods. And they really promote health. Like we talked about, it improves gut microbiome and gut health. And these can really build your support for more immunity and healthy overall health. And you can really see those if you include yogurt and cheese in your diet as part of your healthy choices.
What are some of the essential vitamins and nutrients found in milk?
Yeah, so milk has 13 essential nutrients, you know, that both children and adults need for healthy immune function, stronger bones, hydration, growth and development, and it supports overall wellness. And some of those nutrients you might think of are protein, calcium, phosphorus, a variety of vitamins like A, D, B2, B3, B5, and B12. And it also includes minerals like iodine, potassium, selenium, and zinc. And all of these work together to improve health.
And why would you say the work of the Dairy Council is so meaningful and necessary?
Yeah, so I think it's really important because we provide this free education. We really value partnerships with different organizations to reach all communities here in California to have that collective impact on nutrition and health. And we also work to build this value for dairy agriculture. Dairy ag is, again, the biggest agriculture in here in California. 99% of our farms are ran by farm families. So we like to really help to connect that link of where your food comes from and how it is nutritious and helps you grow too.
Is dairy important for all life stages? I think when we think milk, we think kids, right?
Yeah, really dairy fits into any life stage, but we are seeing some really critical life stages where it might even be more important. So one of the stages that we look at is the first 1,000 days of life. So that includes when moms are pregnant or other people are pregnant and having babies, zero up until the age of two. It's a very critical growth and development period where you're seeing, you know, babies double in size and have a lot of brain growth during that time. So we're seeing that good connection of including milk and dairy as first foods, including whole fat milk in the first year of life from age one to age two to really see the best health results. And then also for kids, they're also growing and learning constantly. So milk and dairy provides those 13 essential nutrients during that key life of stage and sets up that foundation for adult health. And we're also starting to look at that later stage in life, older adults, because the California population and the U.S. population is aging. So looking at the 55 and older, and, you know, more and more older adults are looking at ways to, we're living longer, right? And we want to be healthy. So how can milk and dairy actually provide that? And there's been some studies showing, you know, improved bone health, overall health, less falls and things of that nature. So we really feel that dairy fits in all life stages and can be really healthy addition to anyone's diet.
Now, I heard the Dairy Council won a Telly Award for its Let's Eat Healthy Together broadcast series. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So that was a series that we partnered with the Los Angeles Unified School District and the local PBS station in Los Angeles. It is a 12-episode series related all about nutrition, the five food groups, dairy nutrition. It takes students on a food adventure. So those episodes aired on PBS throughout the winter and spring. And yes, we won two Telly Awards, a bronze award for the overall series and a silver award for the breakfast episodes. So we're really excited to, you know, extend those episodes across California and in schools across California so students can continue to learn from those video series.
Oh, good. Now, what is the mobile dairy classroom and why is hands-on education so vital?
Yeah, so we have that mobile dairy classroom. It's kind of we like to call it the original farm to fork. It's our original learning lab. It's an assembly that is offered to schools across California that really uses a live working cow to teach the students about where their food comes from and also about how to make healthy choices across the five food groups. We do those in person, but also we now offer those sessions virtually, and those can be booked online at healthyeating.org from any school site that might be interested. And we really feel like this furthers agriculture literacy. Students understand where their food comes from, how cows are well cared for by the farmer, and they have this unique experiential learning experience. And we hear people remember, we actually have had a case where we've gone to a school and a teacher was like, hey, I remember getting this when I was a student, and now their students are also receiving the same assembly. So it's something that people really remember, and it's really one of our signature programs.
Now, is the Dairy Council statewide, and could you talk about the communities that you serve?
Yeah, we do serve California statewide, and now that we offer some of our virtual programs and digital resources, we do know that people across the country and even the world might log in or download some of our resources. But yeah, we definitely work. You know, we can't do all of this work alone. We have a really great staff, but we work with partnerships across the states. We work with schools and educators, other nutrition champions, healthcare professionals, and maybe some of our government agency partners to really get these resources out in the hands of families. And we do a variety of different events and educational programming to reach Californians. And we do provide all of these resources at no charge.
Oh, that's fantastic. So what kind of staffing do you have and what roles do they serve?
Yeah, so we have a variety of staff, you know, some that are regionally based working in the film, building those partnerships that I just spoke of. We have registered dietitians that are really continuously studying the science of nutrition and how dairy fits into healthy diets. And we also have media and communication professionals that are, you know, providing those messages through social media and blogs and other communication tools to get to the broader Californians. And then, of course, we have our mobile dairy classroom instructors that are instructing at those assemblies and working with cows and calves across California.
Now, do you work closely with the dairy farmers and dairy processors?
Absolutely. So this is kind of like we are funded through the dairy farmers and dairy processors, kind of their philanthropic contribution to the state of California to really provide this free education to everyone. And we're able to kind of leverage those dollars to collaborate with other local, state, national, and international organizations to really see that vision come through and have greater outcomes and impacts. And again, really at the heart of it, we really want to see strong, healthy Californians growing up and achieving, you know, and also having that academic achievement from having those healthy breakfasts and lunches.
So what are ways that you activate the work of the Dairy Council in the field?
Yeah, so we implement the Let's Eat Healthy initiative, and that really is a network of partners from different, you know, the education, healthcare, and other community partners. And we work together and we create a network of sharing and learning. And also you can join us, go back to our website at healthyeating.org/letseathealthy. And you can find ways to join our movement. You can sign up to be a partner and you'll receive different e-newsletters and learn more about what we're doing and how you can get involved in different activities and events that we host.
Have there been times when you've seen the Dairy Council improve lives?
Yeah, so we hear it from, you know, our partners or like our students, like I mentioned, are really excited about seeing that cow. We really hear our partners are really happy using our resources and how they've made a difference in their classroom. We see all of these successes of really making an impact and difference in these different communities.
Now, what's the future of the Dairy Council of California?
Yeah, so I think we're going to continue to stay true to our roots and providing this ongoing free nutrition education, continuing to connect nutrition and agriculture together and look at farm to school and farm to fork opportunities. We also want to be modern and look at what are ways that we can reach communities and families through digital means, whether that's online or making those more accessible through virtual tours and things of that nature. So we want to continue to build out those messages and work with partners and have these Let's Eat Healthy champions across California, really educating our students and families on the important role that dairy and other healthy eating plays in overall health for people of all ages.
Now, do you have a website and can you get more information on what we discussed today there?
Absolutely. Our website is healthyeating.org, and you can get a wealth of information if you're really interested in some of our June is Dairy Month activities. That is healthyeating.org/dairy, and you can find our PSA with the 49ers around, as well as our activation toolkit there as well.
Great. And do you have social media channels?
You can find us on Facebook at healthyeating.org. And we're also on other channels, just Google Healthy Eating, and then we'll connect you to our Instagram, Facebook, and different channels to follow us and learn more about what we're doing across the state and how you can get some of our resources.
All right. Thank you. That was Amy Delisio with the Dairy Council of California. If you would like more information on what we discussed today, visit healthyeating.org. That's healthyeating.org. If you have questions regarding this program, please direct your correspondence to Public Affairs in care of this station. My next guest is Carlos Eliason with the City of Sacramento. He's here to discuss water efficiency, drought-tolerant landscaping, and rebates available to residents. Thanks for being with us. Could you introduce yourself and provide a little background on what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Carlos Eliason. I'm a media and communication specialist, or essentially a spokesperson for the City of Sacramento Department of Utilities. And we provide drinking water, stormwater and wastewater services for residents and businesses in the city of Sacramento.
Now, we all remember the amount of rain and precipitation we've received in Sacramento earlier this year. Has the city's water conservation goals changed in response?
So it's a little bit of a nuanced question. The first thing to note is that the city of Sacramento is out of drought, as are many areas across the state of California. But that doesn't mean that water conservation is no longer a way of life in the city of Sacramento. We still have a water conservation ordinance that says that residents and businesses should only water their landscapes with sprinklers on certain days of the week. And that's a seasonal ordinance, so it applies differently in the spring and summer than it does in fall and winter. Part of that ordinance also says that doing things like wasting water is not allowed. So even though the restrictions from the drought have ended, those restrictions were essentially saving water up to 15 or 20%, only watering vehicles on certain days of the week, using a shutoff nozzle, and those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. Those have gone away. But the watering conservation ordinance is still in place.
Got it. So you're interested in helping Sacramento property owners make long-term water-efficient changes. Would you share an example of the type of change you're talking about?
Yeah, and the first thing I'll say about that is we've seen over the past decade or so kind of recurring drought. So we'll go into drought for several years, and then we'll kind of come out of that drought, and then we'll go into drought again. We saw it in 2014, about 2017. And again, from the present day till about 2 or 3 years ago. And so that's really the main reason. We know that climate change is affecting the way we do lots of things in our lives, and watering landscapes is one of them. And that's really the main reason why we want to make water efficient changes a way of life for people here in the city of Sacramento. So there's a pretty good variety of ways that people can do that, both inside and outside of the home. We are in summer right now, though, so the outdoors, outside of the home is one of our main focuses. And that's where people generally tend to use the most water. More than half of water use for the average resident is going to be outside of the home. That's for property owners. Obviously, apartment dwellers are going to be a little bit different. But watering those landscapes is going to be the majority of where the water use is. And so that's where we like to help people save the most amount of water. We offer rebates. We offer WaterWise house calls. There's a number of services that people can take advantage of to help use less water or use water more efficiently.
Can you talk a little bit about the rebates the city offers?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we offer a lot of rebates. We do offer indoor and outdoor rebates. That's a good thing to know first off. But like I said, the outdoor rebates are going to be where people can tend to save the most water. The first and biggest one I'll talk about is what we call turf conversion rebates. So we actually offer an amount of money to people to take their grass and convert it to a drought-tolerant landscape. And that's a landscape that's going to use about a third of the water that grass would. It's going to be a lot less maintenance. And once it grows in, it's really a beautiful gardenscape that has these kind of whimsical qualities to it. So that's really the first and most important one. It's also the most amount of money that people can take advantage of as far as a rebate goes. We also offer ways to upgrade irrigation systems with ways that implements that use a lot less water. So there's things like smart controllers. There's more water-efficient nozzles, that sort of thing. And if people are interested, they can actually go to our website. We have all of our rebates listed. If they want a little bit more help, they can call 311, and they will connect them to a water conservation specialist who will help them out with those rebates.
I want to go back and ask about drought-tolerant landscaping, which I think is actually so beautiful and so cool. What are the benefits of incorporating drought-tolerant plants into your home?
Well, the first and most obvious one is saving water. So like I said, you're going to use about a third less water. Some people go even more, but that's just kind of the ballpark figure that we like to use, because that's sort of an average use case scenario. The second one is less maintenance. So, you know, you have to go in and mow your lawn, weed your lawn, maybe fertilize it, which can contribute to urban runoff. So that takes a lot of work. And people have less and less time these days. We're all very busy. A drought-tolerant landscape can oftentimes take a lot less management. Once these plants grow in, they kind of do their own thing. Maybe you might need to prune them a little bit. By and large, you don't have to do all that mowing and maintenance for the other one. Another benefit is that they are really great for bees, insects in general, and birds. So they provide a more biodiverse landscape than grass. Instead of just having that single grass species across your entire lawn, now you have lots of different types of plants, lots of different color that are going to be attracting bees and other types of wildlife like birds. One of my favorite is they turn your front yard into kind of I like to call it a whimsical kind of fairy garden. They look beautiful once they've grown in. Sometimes they even offer more privacy than you would with a normal lawn. So you have all these benefits that kind of add up to, I think, being a smarter choice than just lawn itself. And, you know, a lot of people are not really using their front lawns at all. So why not convert it to something that uses less water, is easier to maintain, and provides a nice little ecoscape for the friendly pollinators in our city.
Are these rebates available to anyone?
They are not available to anyone. They are only available to City of Sacramento water customers. So if you're a City of Sacramento resident or maybe a business owner and you get a City of Sacramento utility bill, by and large, that's going to make you eligible for this. The other thing is you do have to be a property owner, or you can essentially be a bill-paying tenant. And so, like, if you're in a rental that has property that is able to be converted in one way or another, you basically get written approval from the property owner. The requirements do vary from rebate to rebate, and that's one thing that we've heard some feedback. You know, it can be a little bit complicated to know who's eligible. But essentially, if you go on the website, there's going to be a lot more information. And like I mentioned earlier, we've got people who can help walk you through the process, help understand a little bit better about what the eligibility requirements are. We have some eligibility requirements for, say, the turf conversion rebates. And those are in place because we want to make sure that people are converting to the right types of plants that are going to be using less water, the right types of irrigation systems, and so on. So, again, it varies from rebate to rebate. You got to go through the whole application to make sure you know everything. But we also have staff who can help walk you through the process.
Now, what dollar amount can people expect to receive?
So it kind of depends on the rebate. The biggest one is going to be a turf conversion rebate. So for a turf conversion rebate, people can get a maximum rebate of $3,000, and that's for eligible expenses. Those details are going to be on our website, but basically that's going to be for things like non-invasive drought-tolerant plants. There's going to be a certain amount of plant coverage that people are going to have to do on their conversion areas, and lots of other details. Things that are not included or not eligible for that are going to be projects that have already been completed. We get that quite a bit. People want to have a retroactive rebate.
Right.
And that's not something, like, you have to get the project approved ahead of time and afterwards to make sure that it's all done correctly. Another thing that's not eligible is artificial grass. The reason for that is it basically doesn't provide an environment, a biodiverse environment. It can contribute to urban runoff. And it can actually be quite hot. And so it can contribute to the heat island effect. You know, we're in an urban area, and so the sun heats up the concrete around us, and right. Plants provide a little bit of a cooling effect. So artificial grass, not included. And there's a few more things on there that people should pay attention to in terms of what's eligible, what's not. The next one is an irrigation upgrade rebate, and that one is going to be in the ballpark of $400 to $800. That's going to be things like upgrading sprinklers to more water efficient sprinklers, or maybe even drip systems, that sort of thing. In some cases, there are additional funds that can help people pay for some of these things in terms of labor. But again, it's really important to check the details on our website. There are, like I said before, there's rebates for residents and businesses. There are some multifamily customers that we have. Those are going to be entirely different, but make sure to check the website for each individual rebate amount according to the rebate itself.
Now, which one of these rebates offered would you say usually has the most impact in terms of reducing water consumption?
So by and large, converting grass to a drought-tolerant landscape, that's going to make a huge difference. So if more than half of the water use of an average home is in the outdoors, and you convert that half of the water use to about a third, you can see how you're already getting a huge water savings. Keeping lawns green takes a lot of water. Lawns are really, really thirsty. And so making the change from just regular grass to lots of plants that take a lot less water and they provide so much more benefits is going to make a huge impact to how people use water and I think how they use the outside of their home.
Do you have any success stories that you're particularly proud of that you want to share?
You know, we have a lot of success stories. One of the things that I like to tell people is that more recently, especially within the past several years, if you drive around different neighborhoods in the city of Sacramento, you will see that people are starting to convert their lawns to those drought-tolerant landscapes. At least to me, it's quite obvious. When you see it, you know, maybe you're going to see patches of green grass in other homes, and then you're going to be driving along, and all of a sudden, there is a drought-tolerant landscape. And it's very obvious because there's a lot of color, a lot of variation in textures and size. When these are done right, they're really quite beautiful and striking, especially from the outside. We've also heard that it can actually increase a property value because it makes it so much more beautiful than just having that green lawn. And it's a little bit more appeal, or could be a little bit more appeal because of less maintenance. When we've checked in with some of the newer owners, they were happy to see, you know, they were able to still make use of those water efficient upgrades. So the impacts of changing your grass to a drought tolerant landscape can last for years.
What is the most important piece of water conservation information you want the public to take with them this season?
The most important piece. I would say, you know, regardless of your living situation, there are ways that you can save water. And, you know, of course, getting into the habit is really, really important. If you're in a home that has a yard, just being smart about your watering, maybe taking a look at your sprinkler system, seeing where you can make adjustments to those. And we've got tips on our website to help people know what types of ways to adjust that. So it's making all these little small changes, using less water a little bit in the shower, using less water in your landscapes. There's something that everyone can do, and water conservation has pretty much been a way of life since the previous drought, not this last one that we've been in, because of that water and conservation ordinance. So we've got rebates available, basically cash at the end of the day. If people qualify, we've got lots of tips and tricks for people. We have resources where people can reach out and actually get help directly or advice on ways to save water. So there's something appropriate that everyone can do. And to me, I think that's one of the beautiful things about saving water is that, you know, regardless of your living situation, you can do it in a variety of ways.
Where can listeners find more information about these rebates or any additional information on how to reduce their water use?
Yeah, absolutely. So people can go to cityofsacramento.org/utilities, and they will basically go to the water conservation section. We have a button for rebates on our website. If the website's a little too intimidating for people, there can be a lot of details on there. They can email us. They can email us directly, and that's going to be waterconservation@cityofsacramento.org. So they can send an email to us, and we'll get back to them with a little bit of help. If that's too much, they can call us. You can call City Customer Service by dialing 311 if you're within city limits, and they will connect you to a member of our team. And we also do WaterWise house calls, and that's essentially where staff will go out and do an inspection, help you out with leaks, help you figure out what types of upgrades you might be available for, and just kind of a variety of other things. So I think those are the best ways to get a hold of us in terms of finding more information about rebates and any other questions they might have.
And I hear you have an event coming up. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So July 22nd is our, we call it our WaterWise Garden Showcase. And we've had this event a few years in the past. It had a little bit of a different name last year, and then we had it before the pandemic, and obviously that happened, so we weren't doing events for a little while. But essentially, we've got experts on efficient irrigation practices. We've got landscape designers. We're going to have some nurseries out there that will have plants that use a lot less water. Our staff will be there to talk about city water rebates. So that's going to be July 22nd from 9 to 11 a.m. That's going to be over at our Department of Utilities campus. The address for that is 1395 35th Avenue. We're going to have raffle prizes. We're going to have music. Last year we had, I think, about 300 people. We're hoping to match that, maybe add 100 more. So anything you can do to get the word out is going to be great. We're going to have about I think a little bit over a dozen featured vendors, and it should be a fun time for people.
Great. Thank you for doing this. That was Carlos Eliason with the City of Sacramento. If you would like more information on what we discussed today, visit sacwaterwise.com. That's sacwaterwise.com. If you have questions regarding this program, please direct your correspondence to public affairs in care of this station. Thanks for listening. I'm Cody Robinson.
Here's a handy tip to help you have a great-looking yard. Check the soil with a moisture meter before you run your sprinklers. You'll have healthier plants and make every drop count. More WaterWise tips and information at bewatersmart.info.